This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the sports betting network. 105 first pitch with the Orioles and Yankees. So we're going to start there, then we'll get into some fun with Josh Applebaum, of course, VSiN betting analyst, a Sharp report over at VSiN.com. Lit. All Systems Go is the podcast. Download it wherever you get your podcasts. At Josh_insights on X. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Progressive Guest Line brings you Josh Applebaum. It's cracking.
What's going on, Patrick? What's going on, Dustin? I got to ask you a question to start. Oof. Celtics championship parade tomorrow starts around 10 a.m. If you want to pregame it, maybe you have some, a couple beers with your breakfast. But Patrick, I'm 37 years old. I have a big weekend upcoming. I have my buddy getting married on Sunday. So do I go to the parade and tie one on? Does that maybe negate or hurt my weekend upcoming? Or do I just get blackout drunk for the next 4 days, go to the parade, do the pod from Causeway Street? What would you guys do if you're in my
Easy
position?
Easy, Applebaum, with the blackout. Here's what we'll do. I have plenty to say about that. We have three bets that we're making over the program, right? We've got the Dodgers who are up 5-0. We went over 11.5 in that one. Dustin, with the Royals and A's, what'd we take there?
We went Seth Lugo under 18.5 outs recorded. He's kind of cruising through the first two so far.
And now, Josh, you are going to tell us what I'm going to be betting on, Orioles, Yankees in just 4 minutes. And the rest of the crew is going to ride with us as well. What are we doing, bro?
So, Patrick, even though I'm a Sox fan, I'm going to go Yankees in this one. I'm going to go Bronx Bombers just because it seems really fishy. You have two really good teams going head-to-head, battling for first place in the American League East, battling for best record in baseball here. Yet, Yankees are all the way up to a minus 165 home favorite. We actually opened this game, Patrick. Yankees as low as minus 130, minus 140. So one thing that I love, really regardless of the sport, especially money line sports, though, because in spread sports, it's huge steam move, key numbers. You can actually be on the sharp side, but lose if you chase the steam and are late. Money line play situation here, even though the line's getting worse, I think it's a good sign for New York. The fact that the Yankees have risen so far off the opener, there's been no buyback whatsoever. It's not like this line got to, you know, Orioles plus 140. Sharp said, hey, Orioles, great value getting plus money. Let's hit Orioles, bring it back down. No, this has been toward New York from the start with no let up whatsoever. Right now, Yankees are getting around 80% of moneyline bets, nearly 90% of moneyline dollars at VSiN.com, coming directly from DraftKings here. So a bit of both a pro and Joe bet split, one-way movement here in favor of New York. And Patrick, I'm going to put a lot into this pitching matchup here. Now, Cole Irvin is on the bump for the Orioles. He's actually been pretty good. Remember, he was with the Oakland A's a few years ago. He's 6-3, 3.03 ERA, pretty good numbers. But Luis Gil, it's not Gil, it's Gil, Patrick. He has been great. 9-1, 2.03 ERA. In the month of June, he's had only given up 4 earned runs in 12 innings pitched. He has a 1.58 ERA at home. Gil, by the way, is your favorite now to win the American League Rookie of the Year, minus 165. Next guy closest to him would be Mason Miller, the flamethrower from Oakland. He's, I believe, plus 300. But a lot of system matches here on the Yankees. Favorite off a loss versus opponent off a win. Classic buy low, sell high. Yankees favorite here. They lost last night. Those teams are 239 and 150, 61%, 5% ROI this year. Yankees are your third best chalk team in baseball. When the Yankees are favored, they're winning at a ridiculous rate, Patrick. They're 40 and 19, 68%, 14% ROI. And then also, system here, I kind of was digging up the other day, but two elite teams go head-to-head. So I defined elite by a win percentage of 600 or better. Would match here with the Yankees. Two elite teams. Take the favorite. Favorites in the spot are winning 60% of the time. Little cherry on top, Ryan Addison, the home plate ump. He's nearly 60% to the home team historically. So at first glance, it's like, hey, Orioles good team, Patrick. Might as well take the plus money. But no, looks like wise guys have really sided with the Yankees here. That's where I want to be. And it's good to see that Aaron Judge is in the lineup after he got a fastball on the hand about a couple days ago.
So two bets for the family. Dustin, we're going to lay a half a run first five with the Yankees, $130. And we're going to lay the juice with full game on the Yankees. Love that. And the reason that you know it's Gil is because you're a big New England Revolution fan. That's your MLS team up in New England. And the Gil brothers actually play for the Revs, spelled G-I-L. Nacho, and I think it's Carlos Gil, play for the Revs. So as a big Boston guy, you already knew that. Now let's get to your conundrum. First, we should start with the idea. Larry, hit me with it if you could. We should start with...
We did it!
Jason Tatum. Good job, Larry. Look, I'm not going to championship shame you. And look, you've had just an embarrassment of riches in New England. The Bruins have been great. The Patriots, I think they've been pretty good for the past couple of decades. Even Paul Pierce won one with Kevin Garnett, obviously. The Revs, you know the story. This is the most, I don't know about the Celtic team as far as excitement. Where do you stand with Tatum doing the most awkward thing after the championship and your Boston Celtics?
So I'm high on the Celtics right now, Patrick. I think the question is, you know, is this sustainable and are we looking at a dynasty? Now, let's not get ahead of ourselves a little bit, but I think if you're a Celtics fan, what you're excited about is the age of your star players and their contract situation right now, because Jaylen Brown, I believe he's 27. Jason Tatum is 26. I mean, that's your dynamic duo. You just had Brown signed a max deal extension going beginning of last year. Tatum is about to get his max deal. You have Holiday locked up for the next couple of years. Derek White needs a new contract. But what was interesting to me, Patrick, when you bring up Jason Tatum, is really how the betting market got it wrong with Tatum as MVP. And really watching that game, you were seeing the live betting market get Jason Tatum MVP, finals MVP, late in the game as high as minus 150. Tatum was putting up 30 points. Jaylen Brown had a bit of a quiet night. Even though Tatum, it seemed like everything was lined up for him. He got the post-game interview with Lisa Salters. The first commercial after the game was a Nike commercial starring Jason Tatum. Everything was lining up as Tatum's night in his coronation, yet the MVP goes to Jaylen Brown. So Brown had a great, I think he was their overall postseason MVP, but that was surprising to me. If you look at the stats, I know Brown was great defensively, but to me it was a surprise that Tatum didn't win MVP. So I think this is kind of a good thing moving forward, Patrick, because these guys have won all the awards. What can still motivate them? I think Jaylen Brown, it's becoming, you know, a first or second team all NBA. He hasn't done that yet. Tatum hasn't gotten the finals MVP yet. That's something to motivate him. So I think a great spot here for Brad Stevens to keep this thing rolling. My only concern, Patrick, they're playing a lot of basketball over the last few seasons here. Jason Tatum and Jrue Holiday are now going to play for Team USA. Tatum, I think, could use a little bit of a break here. I know he's only 26, but my only question would be health, injuries, playing a ton of basketball. Other than that, I got no complaints. It took 5 years for a title, Patrick. That's a long time in New England.
Okay, well, if you do go to the parade tomorrow, I want to hear you screaming this. Hit me, Larry.
We did it!
That's so just a rip-off of anything's possible, KG, Patrick. I mean, you can't come up with something
which makes it
that.
Even. Which makes it even worse.
Hold on, did you guys see that he did even more ripping off later that day? I didn't see it till later. I think it was Wednesday night, Tuesday night. They had, like, after they had the trophy, they had a little party or whatever, and he grabs the mic, and he starts doing the, what are they going to say if we didn't win one, or whatever the shtick was LeBron did with the Heat. And it was just like, he literally is just ripping off everyone else's catchphrases.
Jason Tatum is AI. He's artificial intelligence. Like, there's nothing going on inside. Let's get to the conundrum. We'll bring the three of us up. So you've got a parade tomorrow, and you've got a buddy's wedding on Saturday. Is that correct?
That's correct, Patrick. And again, I can't drink like I used to, so how do I handle this weekend? I need some advice.
Okay. You just said it. It took 5 years to get to this point. It's not a question of should you go to the Celtics parade. It's I have to go to the Celtics parade. So that's number one. Number two, your buddy's wedding. Is it a good friend?
Close friend. I would say power ranking, probably like my fourth best friend, Patrick.
Okay.
It's a weird thing to do.
I think it's potential bailout possibility, if I'm being honest, on the wedding. Weddings are overrated. I mean, you understand what I'm saying. A big guy, just to answer the question, he's got to go to the parade, correct?
Yeah, you have to go to the parade, but I do think the wedding is a bailout. I think you're underestimating the fact that if you get drunk at the parade Friday, you only need a couple of drinks on Saturday to kick up what's already in your system to be feeling good. The hangover can be Sunday's problem.
I like that. You're planning ahead. I like
because
that, Dustin.
All that happened, you're going to feel awful when you wake up Saturday morning. We're just at that age. It's unavoidable.
Yeah, it's just a fact. So, this is factual.
But if you start drinking for the wedding earlier, you will feel better. You just have to like maintain like a very small dose of the alcohol throughout the day, and then you can go hard later and worry about it on Sunday.
Pretty good deal there. I would say also, guys, keep an eye out for, we're talking about going to Plain Ridge Park Casino the night before the wedding. A lot of the girls, you know, they got to get their makeup going. They want to get to bed early. Me and the boys, this is our last friend getting married. So it's kind of our last rodeo here. Might go to Plain Ridge Park Casino. Uber rides only 15 minutes from the wedding venue. Keep an eye out. We might be taking over that casino this weekend.
But, by the way, fourth best friend. He hardly even cares about the guy. Secondly, do you like his wife to be?
I love his wife to be. Amazing girl, super smart, Patrick. She, both of them, a little bit older in life, had a lot of, you know, hits and misses throughout the years, finally found each other. She's half Brazilian, so there's going to be a lot of Brazilian influence here. Could be a lot of fun, Patrick. Keep out on my
breaking news. First, breaking news. First off, she's sitting on something. You know what I'm saying, Dustin?
Yes.
I just went from you bailing on the wedding to inviting me to the wedding with the Brazilians.
Yep. Patrick, they know how to party, man. Seriously, I need to get prepared.
Dude, I don't even have to ask if she's sitting on something. Woo! And by the way, when you say older, like, what do you consider old? Because you know I'm old.
Patrick, but you're definitely not old. You got the young baby face. You're aged like a fine wine, my man.
Hair of the dog on Saturday. Go to the wedding. Check out some Brazilians. VSiN betting analyst, all systems go as the podcast. Have fun at the parade, Josh. We'll talk to you next week. We did it.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, become a VSiN Pro Spring Special, rolling into the Summer Special. 13 months for $199. You get a month for free. Save $41. VSiN.com/subscribe. The picks, the splits, the guides, everything. To get the deal, you have to use the promo code SHARP to unlock it. We welcome you back. Inauspicious start for our Yankee bet, as the Orioles have plated one in the top of one. So we'll get to how. I think Juan Soto's being a donk out and right. Quickly, an update on Spain and Italy. OG, big guy, own goal. Italy knocks it in their own net.
Whoa.
Spain up 1-0. It's not great for my Italy bet, but what are you going to do? The Dodgers have plated five.
That's low-key embarrassing for them.
What, an own goal?
Yeah, scoring your own net. It's the opposite of what you're supposed to do.
For sure. 100%. Now, we're going to get to the comeback player of the year market, because there's been some proposed changes to how this thing is judged, and you can find that market over at DraftKings. But I did want to ask you a quick question, and I know the guys in the closet have seen it, the control room. Dustin is attacking lunch today.
Look,
like it's his last supper. Are you not eating for like 10 years? Because you are housing that food.
I'm realizing I have to eat during this show. If not, I leave the show starving, and then I get home and I eat everything in my fridge. We don't have to show all of it, guys.
But, I mean, you were just going hard on. What were you eating? It looked like you had a Thanksgiving
turkey
going
wrap.
On.
Just a turkey wrap on low-carb wrap. It'll hold me over. It's my lunch. Got to eat three meals. I really am supposed to eat five meals, but I'm only eating three.
Little uncouth, just right there. Maybe that's why the bartenders don't like you over to your right, because they look over and they see you just pounding like you're walking to the electric chair.
Everyone eats, Patrick, so everyone's got to eat at some point. And I have 4 minutes 100%. In the break to do it.
And you know what? We need the Yankees to eat in the bottom of the
well,
first.
Well, look, fly ball, and it wasn't hit like super hard or anything, and Juan Soto loses it in the sun to start this thing off in the first for the Orioles, goes over his head, double, leads to an eventual run. Now we're down 1-0, laying a half run with the Yankees here in the first five.
I wish somebody would have stole that sunshine. We got a big shot, a wide shot from Larry, and it does appear, I don't know if it's your first or second choice behind the bar at Bar Canada, but we saw
a
young lady over there.
I do not know her. We've never conversed.
Are you planning on introducing yourself?
No, because we've come too far in her being new for me to introduce myself. Like,
there's a shot of the big guy. Beautiful setup. Beautiful setup over there at the D, the VEASAN Studios. You can see the insignia in the background and the big guy sitting on his throne, his perch there. Okay, so bottom one, one out, Yankees. We need them to get started here. Let's get to the comeback player of the year. Now, this is something you're kind of obsessed with. And again, rightfully so. The comeback player of the year, you can read the list that have won this. There is no rhyme or reason.
No.
There is, it just uniformly, there is no rhyme or reason. And obviously, the big discussion last year, everybody was going in on DeMar Hamlin. It just came down to, was he going to get on the field? If he got on the field, it was a no-brainer. He was going to win the comeback player of the year. He did not. And obviously, he had that terrible situation where he almost died and then came back to play for the Bills.
Oh, no, he did die.
Yeah, he was out. And I don't think he's on a roster now. And then Joe Flacco, who's a great story, ends up winning comeback player of the year. But it looks like changes could be afoot, Dustin.
Yeah, so the AP is asking voters to consider the following when voting for comeback player of the year. Quote, they put out this statement. The spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year Award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season. Now, we're all going to look at what you just mentioned with Flacco and Hamlin, but apparently the discussions about wanting to put more parameters on this award started when Geno Smith won the award over Christian McCaffrey the year before. McCaffrey coming back from injury, Geno Smith coming back from being a backup and not being good at playing football.
Correct. What's the market look like this year? We can try to piece through this.
It's a fascinating market to look at this year because we have so many quarterbacks coming off injuries. First off, your favorite on the board's Aaron Rodgers, plus $1.25 over at DraftKings right now. Joe Burrow with the wrist injury. He is number two on the board, plus $2.50. Kirk Cousins and his Achilles down in the dirty at 5-1. Anthony Richardson from the Colts is 6-1. And then Nick Chubb, 12-1. Those one, two, three, four, five players are coming off injuries. Most of the rest of the guys after, there's injuries, but there's also storylines involved in their candidacy for comeback player of the year.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but on the list that you can find over at DraftKings comeback player of the year, nobody's coming off being deceased.
Let me just check the bottom. No, it doesn't look like anyone died last year, so that angle's not going to work.
That is, to me, it's an unserious market.
Yes.
If you want to have some fun, and this is, I'm being said, like, I know people went hard on DeMar Hamlin last year and got burned, but if essentially your conversation comes down to, does Rodgers, does Burrow, does Cousins, does Richardson, do they stay healthy? And then simply compiling who had better stats. So it's a two-pronged attack that's really not, in my estimation, a sage bet.
No, well, one, we're always handicapping voters, right, when it comes to this award. And it's voted on by the AP, and they want their voters to look at it a different way. There's nothing to say that the people who vote for this award are going to follow their rules and they could continue to do it the way they want to do it, right? Like, so we're handicapping what the voters are going to do. I have a question. Do you really think the writers are going to vote for Aaron Rodgers if he's eligible for this award and it comes down to him, Burrow, and Cousins? I don't know how the media feels about him at this point.
Yeah, the Rodgers stuff, it's a little overblown at this point. I mean, there were rumors that obviously he was getting fined. Saleh got in trouble with the organization, a.k.a. Aaron Rodgers didn't like his tone when he said it was an unexcused absence. We played that clip for you on the program, and immediately I was like, that's not going to go over well. And Saleh learned his lesson very quickly and turned course as far as Rodgers. But Rodgers, unexcused absences, I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, there were rumors that he was off at an ayahuasca retreat. Yeah. I mean, that's what he does. So, yeah. Whether or not, look, the guy's 40 years old. He's a champ. He's an MVP multiple times. I'm not concerned about him missing these minis.
Okay. But I think the media has this
weird example, but I'm not concerned about it.
My point would be, we're talking about voters for this award. Now, have more stipulations on this award to look at only the guys coming off these injury type storylines. Well, I don't know if I trust the voters to give Aaron Rodgers, if he comes back and plays the whole season, the Jets go to the playoffs, if they're going to give him the award when there's so many other options and he's such a short number here. Joe Burrow's won the award before. He won it in 2021. Like, he's been the comeback player of the year, and he gets hurt a lot. So how many times is he going to win the award? Kirk Cousins, yeah, maybe, sure, that's an option as well. 5-1 feels kind of juicy on Kirk Cousins, but it's an Achilles, and he's 35 years old coming off an Achilles. Let's see what he can do for a full year. The verbiage of this statement from the AP frustrates me as someone who likes to take risks in these markets. I like to shoot long and take some shots, and there was a narrative I was trying to build up for myself, Patrick, where I like Sam Darnold. I think there's a situation where this is a guy who had a chance to develop by not playing a lot for the last few years. He's going to go to Minnesota where he has a number one receiver, a really good receiving core, a great tight end, a run game with Aaron Jones, and a good offensive coach in O'Connell, where I thought there was a chance Sam Darnold could be worth a shot in this market. He was 30-1. He's now 20-1 over at DraftKings. I don't see how I can bet him now. He's not coming off an injury. The only thing he's coming off is not having an opportunity to play. And based on this AP statement, he is completely unbettable if the voters are going to follow these parameters.
Well, yeah, a couple of things. I agree with what you said about Rodgers. At plus 130, if you are going to bet this comeback player of the year market, Rodgers is a ridiculous number. Because remember, these are humans that vote, and there could be biases against him. You have to take everything into your handicap. He is polarizing. So if it's all level, Burrow, Cousins, you're going to get a better number. They'll vote for him. They'll vote for them. They'll vote for anybody but Rodgers. That's my estimation.
Yeah.
And then secondly, I think you said it was Albert Breer reporting that J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota, to your point about Sam Darnold, has less than a 10% chance of starting the season at quarterback, which we pretty much knew.
Yeah. And look, you're going to tell me that Russell Wilson, who basically, right, he signed a huge deal with Denver after getting traded there and got cut. He's 12-1 for comeback player of the year. If he somehow, and I don't see it as being likely, but if he somehow puts it together, recaptures some of his old form, and leads Pittsburgh into the postseason, he shouldn't be able to win this award if he has a great season. He's 12-1 right now, but based on these parameters, I don't know if he's someone that they would give the award to.
I agree. 100%. By the way, Heald needs to settle down, a runaround first, nobody out, top of two. So we'd like that to be cleaned up. And Juan Soto, you owe us first run.
Big time.
You owe us that first run. All right, so comeback player. It's an unserious market, if we're being honest.
This and coach of the year. Don't really know.
Chris Ruffalo, Pick Dogs, handicapper. He's got some plays for you coming up here on the program. We're going to talk to Jensen Lewis, who's broadcasting, I believe, as we speak. And Kenny Danico talking about the hockey as well. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, check out VSiN.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by your state, betting tools, betting guides, and more. Over at VSiN.com, picked a bad day to back Luis Heel. He's getting rocked by the Orioles. They're up 3-0, top of two, runners on first and second with one out. We'll keep you updated there as we welcome you back. Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson hanging out in Vegas at the D. I'm Patrick Maher in Los Angeles. We're going to go north of the border and bring in our buddy, of course, Chris Ruffalo, Roof Dog, PickDogsWithAZ.com handicapper. Roof the Pick Dog on Twitter. Brought to you on the Progressive Guest Line. It appears he said he's had three changes of shirts today because you're dealing with a heat wave up in Toronto, huh?
Oh, dude, it's hot. I don't know where this came from. I don't know if you guys sent it up here. If we just had some bad luck. I don't know what's going on, but the constant wardrobe changes happen to be a thing around this household with me during this time of year.
Well, stay cool. We'll get through the segment. Bases loaded. Heel. Big guy. We're getting absolutely rocked right now.
No,
I mean, it's
not.
Unbelievable.
It's not going well. This bet's dead. It's done. Move on to the next one. It's not coming through.
All right. Let me.
You'd rather it happen this way than have to wait till the fifth inning for him to blow up.
Let me start here with the hockey. So, of course, we've got some juice, Roof Dog, because we're headed back to Alberta
for game six and a short favorite on the Oilers in game six, 118-102 on the Panthers. He just gave up yeah. a bases loaded double, six runs, Orioles up 6-0. Good night to that bet. Roof Dog, you're in Toronto. Help us understand as Americans what you think about Alberta and Edmonton.
I'm torn here because I always wanted my Leafs to be the team that broke the Canadian drought for the Stanley Cup. We haven't seen a cup up here since 93 or 94. I can't remember which one it was. Montreal was the last one to do it. But it's not going to be Toronto, it looks like, for the next little bit. And right now I'm starting to think that Edmonton's got a real chance of doing it, to be completely honest with you. They've just got all the momentum going for them right now. I have a hard time thinking that the Oilers are going to go down without a fight.
So the total 5.5, as it has customarily been, Edmonton. So the pressure's at Edmonton game six. And then if we were to go back to Florida for game seven, the Panthers, I don't like them in that spot, but would you lay it the short price there with the Oilers tomorrow night?
To be honest, I would. The Oilers were a much better team at home over the course of the regular season. In the playoffs, the thing about the Edmonton Oilers is that they're a team that, just frankly lives and dies by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And now what you're starting to see is that these guys are coming to play now. I mean, it was a little bit sleepy from these guys in the early beginning of that series, but now, the power play is coming to play. I just saw the power play for the Edmonton Oilers is coming, but the penalty kill's been elite for them in the postseason. In their last 15 games, they've killed off 43 of 44 penalties on the other side. They've scored more shorthanded goals in that 15-game stretch than they've given up on the power play. So the special teams are coming to play for Edmonton. Stuart Skinner from games 4 through 7 in this playoffs, 9-0, a 1.55 goals against average. It's one of those things where it took the Oilers a little while to get going, but every time they had a 3-game losing streak in the regular season, they rattled off a bunch of wins in a row after that. They came out stronger because of it. And right now, it feels like that little almost comeback attempt in game 3 was the turning point, and they started to figure it out.
And Connor McDavid, give me the perception of McDavid up in Canada. He was toying in game 5 with the Panthers, just transcendent talent. What's your take on Connor McDavid?
I think the take in Toronto is pretty much the same as it is for the bulk of the NHL, if not the entire NHL, is that he's the best player in the league. Hands down, he can do it all. We've seen him dance through. I remember seeing him dance through the Dallas defense. I think it was in game 7 where, or the closeout game of that series, I should say, where he deked through everybody and within, short distance, put it top shelf. And he can do it all. I mean, this is a guy that has, 100 assist seasons on the regular. I think he's had the 3 highest point totals last 3 years for any player. Like I said, the public perception is that McDavid is the best player in the NHL, and I tend to agree with it.
All right, let's go baseball with our buddy Chris Ruffalo here on Sharp Money. You don't have to watch the Orioles-Yankees game for the rest of the day, by the way. Heel can't get anybody out. San Francisco and St. Louis. It looks like San Francisco on the road is going to be a short favorite. What are you doing with this matchup?
This one, I'm trying to understand the line move because for me, Keaton Wynn has been a no bet for the majority of this season, especially since the Giants haven't won a game with him on the mound since April 28th. His last 5 starts, 0-5, Keaton Wynn himself, an ERA over 13. The Cardinals in their last 10 games hitting .259 against right-handed pitching. The San Francisco Giants hitting just .197. Looks like they're going to go against Andre Pallante here. At Rickwood Field, there's always talk about sometimes these neutral site games that, the dimensions of the field change. Well, they've made the adjustments, pushed the fences back about 10 feet across the board to make it more of a major league, caliber, major league dimension field. And to me, it still doesn't matter. Keaton Wynn been batting practice for opposing teams, and I think it's going to be no different tonight. I think the Cardinals get it done. They have the better bullpen. I'm taking the Cardinals in this one.
Big guy, you got to play there?
No, that's a tough one. But the Cardinals, to me, with them in the wild card mix the way they are, I still am intrigued by them overall for like the stretch run through the summer where I think they have some depth that some other teams don't, where they're built to withstand this situation. The Giants, I don't love their lineup. They're a little bit top-heavy. The pitching, they're very top-heavy. I like the Cardinals going forward if I was going to look at them down the road through the dog days of summer.
What's the take on your Blue Jays there in town?
Disappointment for a lot of it. Just trying to figure out what moves can be made at the trade deadline. The thing is that I think the next couple weeks going into the All-Star break is going to be key for this team. If it completely tanks, the Blue Jays could be sellers. That being said, I don't think we're going to be moving guys like Bichette and Guerrero Jr. I think those guys are standing. They're cornerstone pieces. They just got to worry about trying to extend these guys. But you could see guys like Yusei Kikuchi on the move. Jordan Romano's been a name that's been thrown out there because a lot of teams are always looking for closers. But the next couple weeks are going to be key. But they just have to figure out how to score runs consistently. That's been a problem for the Jays this season.
Roofdog, have you gotten into, do you bet soccer with the Euros and Copa America? Do you bet any of the soccer?
I do, actually. Yeah, soccer is one of my favorite sports to bet personally. It's just one of those things that, you know, there's just so many. I think we talked about when we were talking about college basketball, there's just so many leagues that you can find little edges in. I mean, I tend to key to more towards the major European leagues, some MLS and the international stuff personally. But yeah, I'm heavy on the Euros. I got Italy playing right now. I think they were losing at last check, but oh man, this is the perfect time of year for me. Baseball is keeping me busy, but we got some international soccer to keep me tied over as well.
Yeah. Right now, Spain on an own goal by Italy up 1-0. They've been the better team, much the better team, 16 shots as opposed to just two total shots. Italy doesn't even have a shot on target in the matchup, and we're in the 81st minute. So it looks like Spain is going to finish up with the dub there, 8th ranked as far as FIFA, V9 ranked as far as Italy's concerned. Do you have a country that you pull for? Where's Roof Dog? Well, Canada tonight in Copa America, a huge dog against Argentina and Messi.
Yeah, for good reason. We had our moment in the sun in the World Cup, and bowed out gracefully. And Copa America is going to be interesting. I want to see the direction of this team going forward. But I'm rooting for Italy in the Euros. And unfortunately, like I said today, it looks like we're taking the loss. But I got a lot of English friends as well up in these parts, and I got to tell you, I have no idea where the bias came from for that team to be a favorite this tournament.
Well, that team stinks. I mean, Gareth Southgate, this is going to be his last tournament because the way the subs he brought on late, just the lack of organization today against Denmark. Denmark was the better squad, and England is much more talented.
Yeah, I think you could easily argue that they probably should have lost that first game as well against Serbia. So.
Yep.
I keep saying it with England, the only thing that's going home is that team, and that's going to be
Roofdog with the international burn.
Yeah. They're going home sooner than they'd like.
Take the Cards today, and he likes the Oilers tomorrow night in game 6 to force a game 7. You can find Chris Ruffalo at pickdogswithaz.com, handicapper there, and find him on Twitter at Roof the Pick Dog. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you.
Gentlemen, it's always a good time coming on to see you. I want to be able to do this more often.
Yeah, we love having you. Roof Dog, a big fan of hanging out in Vegas with the big guy. Those two get together, it gets interesting real quick. Real quick.
It gets bilingual real quick.
it does. See, Poppy. We've got the NFL, the NBA. You may not know this, NBA draft coming up next Wednesday. We're going to dive into the market next.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSIN, the sports betting network. We welcome you back on a Thursday, June 20. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy, of course, there in downtown Las Vegas at the D. Sometimes there's some bad handicapping, and sometimes you just got to flush it down the toilet. And the idea of backing Luis Gil today, not a great look as We're now mid-second, so we're headed to the bottom of the second, and the Orioles lead the Yankees 7-0. Luis Gil didn't make it out of the top of the second, big guy.
Yeah, let's go big picture on this because the bet's dead, so there's no point in trying to worry about it right now. Over at DraftKings, Luis Gil is still a minus 165 favorite for AL Rookie of the Year. And the question always is with young pitchers is when does the tax of all the innings they're throwing catch up with them at the major league level? And for Luis Gil, is this a one-off or is this the beginning of the regression that seemed like was going to happen with him at some point? Right now, as that favorite in the market, as I mentioned, minus 165, curious if someone else can get back into play where NL Rookie of the Year is down to a few guys. If Luis Gil ends up putting together a couple of bad starts in a row, I think the AL Rookie of the Year market opens wide open again. Mason Miller's 3-1. Abreu from the Red Sox is 5-1. Colton Cowser was your favorite after the first month, is back to 6-1. There's a lot. Wyatt Langford for Texas, if he ever puts it together, at 20-1. There are a lot of names that still have a chance to be in the mix if Gil starts to fall apart.
All right. Well, there you have it. Bottom second, 7-0 Orioles. We'll go ahead and flush that one. So it was reported earlier. Let's get into some NBA because we want to talk about the market over at DraftKings on the NBA draft. But reported that Pelinka became sold on, this is the best quote from Wojnarowski, became sold on Redick's ability to connect with players and his basketball IQ, believes surrounding him with an elite coaching staff will help shorten the learning curve into his first coaching job. So obviously, a little nepotistic with LeBron James hiring his podcast host, a dude that has no experience to coach the Los Angeles Lakers, which is a pretty wild thing to think about. So J.J. Redick has agreed upon a four-year contract to become the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. So that is that. Now let's get to, and I generally go pretty hard on draft prep. This year I haven't, and there's a reason. This may be, in the history of the NBA, the worst draft class we've ever seen. And I'm not talking hyperbole here. We actually found one. So we were talking about this conversation a little earlier today in our pre-show meeting. We're going to have a little fun with it. We're going to run it back, which is something we'd like to do, and talk about drafts from the past that may rival the 2024, which is coming up on Wednesday, NBA draft. And again, remember, kind of like football, they're going to go 2 days here. Well, football goes more, but they're going to have the first round. And then on Thursday, I believe, have the second round. The draft order right now, we can throw it up. Your Atlanta Hawks, a lot of questions as to what the Hawks are going to do with Trae Young and, Murray. Like, they have decisions to make. There have been rumors they're going to keep that number one overall pick. I don't know really who would want to move up for it. The Washington Wizards are sitting 2. The Rockets are sitting 3. We can throw up the graphic there. The Spurs are sitting 4. My Pistons, worst possible, sitting 5. The Charlotte Hornets, 6. I'll just round out the top 10. The Portland Trailblazers are 7. As you see, the Spurs are 8 and 9, Memphis, and 10, the Jazz. Now, when I say the worst draft, it's white boy summer. This draft class is, it's a joke going around the internet. It's white boy summer because it is filled with just a bunch of basic players, college, not overly ripe, and Euros. Now, you have to caution the conversation with, we don't know anything about these European players. Darko Milicic was picked because Chad Ford went over in Europe and said, this guy's awesome, and he ends up getting selected ahead of Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade. So not a, well, maybe it wasn't Melo. Maybe I can't remember the exact order, but
no, you're right. Wasn't he his second pick? I'll pull it.
Yeah,
up.
It was second overall pick. So certainly in front of Wade. So again, hit or miss. I'll give you, let's get to the odds over at DraftKings on who's odds on favorite to go one overall. Because go ahead, big guy.
So right now, I'm going to butcher this name, Zachary Risace. That's how I'm going to say it, but it looks like Zachary Risacher is your favorite at minus 125. Alexandre Sarr is plus 120, which is interesting because a report came out yesterday that the Hawks have been able to bring him in for a workout. So it sounds like he doesn't want to be in Atlanta. Therefore, he would be off the options for Atlanta at number one. And then a bet I did place this morning was on Donovan Klingon at 4-1. He's now down to plus 370, and he keeps shrinking and shrinking everywhere I look.
Okay, so let's discuss. We'll start with, and again, I don't know how to say it either. He played in France. His nationality is French, and that is Rusace, who's 19 years old. His pro comparison is Harrison Barnes, if you're into that type of thing. There's been a lot of questions about what the Atlanta Hawks are going to do. The assumption is they're either going to go this French kid, Rusace, Donovan Klingon, or Alex Sarr. Sarr had been the name. I believe he plays over in New Zealand. He's a Frenchman as well. They believe at 19, 7 feet, power forward center, a lot of people have been positing that Sarr is going to go one overall. He's big. Remember, they're measuring without shoes now. He measured just under 7 foot in socks, 224, 7'4 wingspan. At that size, his ability to move, people just like the project. Now, you have to be careful because Giannis, of course, and others that we just don't know a ton about. So what'd you say the Sarr number was?
Sarr right now is plus $1.20 to go number one overall.
Okay, and then Rusace, I got nothing. He's just a 6'8", 204, shooting guard, shooting forward. You know, there's, again, they're using Harrison Barnes as the comp. But it starts to get interesting where you mention, and it gives you an idea. There are two names that are being discussed potentially that could go one overall. One is Donovan Klingon, okay? That is another level of funny. Is he big? Yes, he's 7'2". Does he have good hands for a big? Yes, he does. Is he... That's all. I mean, the comparison is Roy Hibbert. Now, understand, Roy Hibbert was already stale as far as the position and body type and the way he plays when he was drafted. So you're going to take a 7'2 center out of UConn. That did he attempt three-pointers? No, he can't shoot. He can't stretch. The idea of taking a big in 2024 that can't stretch, it's all about fit is what I'm saying with Klingon. But there have been rumors, and you bet it, that he could go one overall.
Oh, yeah. I don't bet it because I think he should. I bet it because I think he might, because at least he is somewhat of a known commodity in this draft. There are so many unknowns, and I don't know about the Hawks as a team that can take the risks with the way things have gone recently for them. I agree completely. I would not take a 7-footer. I would only take wings. Wings, 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 three-point shooters, positionless players that could play power forward, small forward, shooting guard, all three of them at once. I want those types of players. However, I don't trust the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, the Atlanta Hawks are an organization that, as we're seeing, Luka didn't want to be there, right? European players, if Sarr doesn't want to be there, well, now we have a trend of Euros not wanting to play down in Atlanta, which means it opens it up for them to take a more reliable, safer pick in Donovan Klingon, which is weird. And then they'd have to move on from Clint Capella, and they'd have to restructure that whole roster. But I do think that is around the corner for that organization.
What is Reed Shepard, of course, the freshman coming out of Kentucky? What's his number to go one overall?
75-1.
Okay, so that's not going to happen. But he is going to be a top five pick. People,
Castle's,
let me explain something. Reed Shepard is 6'1.5". Not necessarily a pure point guard. Not a shooting guard. His ability off the dribble is limited. But he's a great shooter. An exceptional shooter. A transcendent shooter. But he's 6'1.5". Like, you just saw Kyrie have trouble with all that length. Kind of similar, but, you know, his comparison, Reed Shepard, the kid out of Kentucky, would be like Dante DiVincenzo.
Yeah.
And he's going to be going top five. Like, this draft is unconsciously bad.
It's a combination of things. We blame college basketball for all the movement. We blame it for the lack of development. We blame it maybe for the one-and-done situation. Stephon Castle, though, he's 45-1 to go number one overall. He makes a little bit more sense. He's a little bit bigger, obviously, than Shepard. He's got like 4 or 5 inches on him. Can shoot a little bit from the outside. That makes sense. I think we're going to see a trade. I don't think Atlanta makes the number one pick, would be my vibe, as we're like less than a week out from this. I think they find a way to get San Antonio or someone. They don't get a haul back, but I think they move out of that spot and let someone else get the player they actually want.
I mean, I think you're right. Stephon Castle, what's his Stephon Castle go to top five?
Ooh,
he's
top five?
The 6'6 shooting guard out of UConn. 19, he's a defensive stopper. He can handle the ball. He can pass. He's strong.
Okay. -140.
I think that's a say. I think Stephon Castle going top five is because he's a long defensive stopper on the perimeter. We'll come back, continue with the draft and the worst draft of all time.